Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Frederick Douglas. I represent Michael Davis and Davis and Associates in this particular proceeding. We're here today asking for a reversal of the lower court ruling dismissing Mr. Davis's complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. The court below viewed a False Claims Act suit and made a determination it was bound by this court's precedent in the case of Fidley versus Boren. We respectfully submit that that case has been implicitly, or the rationale for that case has been implicitly overruled by the Supreme Court's case, the Rockwell case. If I may, just briefly, going back to the Finley case was a determination by this circuit in which it tried to harmonize two sections of the False Claims Act and made a determination that the public disclosure bar required that the person who was an original source had made his disclosure voluntarily to the government prior to the public disclosure that had been made. Looking at this, the court below found, and the government, and that is the D.C. government agrees, Mr. Davis had direct and independent knowledge. However, the disclosure that was made here took place prior to any disclosure made by him and his information when he disclosed
the government. What did he tell the government that he knew? What was his disclosure?
The disclosure that he made, I believe, Your Honor, is referenced below by two letters that he sent to the Department of Justice.
And those are in the record, and I thought it curious that he's never offered the letters that he sent. This is the only evidence we have.
That's the only evidence that we have.
And so one allegation was of Medicaid fraud. That's the language of the letter from Mr. Kopansky. And the letter from Mr. Kleinberg refers to diversion of Medicare funds, falsification of reports by the D.C. government. Nothing in there talks about the lack of service documentation, right? He didn't get to that level of detail.
Your Honor, we don't know. The record
has got to prove, the jurisdictional fact burden's on you. You haven't shown
the jurisdictional. I apologize, Your Honor.
No, that's right.
The jurisdictional fact burden is on us, and we submit that we met that jurisdictional fact burden by submitting that particular document to the
United States. Nothing more specific than this, right? Medicaid fraud, diversion of Medicare funds, falsification of reports.
Now, what we submitted was evidence that we had submitted documentation. What that exact documentation was that we had submitted was not asked. And all we said is that we had submitted documentation. The issue in the statute is whether we had made a voluntary disclosure.
My question is, of what? Did you make a voluntary disclosure of a lack of documentation for service?
Your Honor, I can't speak to the exact nature of the disclosure because that information is not in the record below. That is not in the record below, and there was no inquiry made about that. The only thing that's in the record below is the fact that a disclosure was made and that the United States thanked him for that particular
disclosure. Disclosure was made. But what I'm struggling with is whether it was a sufficient, was it an adequate disclosure?
I understand what the court is.
I mean, the statute distinguishes between general allegations and specific information, right?
It does distinguish between that and what we contend, Smith, is that we made a disclosure that was sufficient to alert the government to fraud. And we offer proof of that by what the government's response was. And I don't think that the statute says that you must detail everything and anything that you submitted to the government so that we can weigh the quantum of that evidence and come to a conclusion as to whether the disclosure is adequate. We said we made that disclosure. We met that initial burden of showing that, and that was sufficient to meet the jurisdictional argument that...
So you made a showing of Medicaid fraud and a falsification of reports and of diversion of Medicare funds. That's the showing. That's the disclosure.
That's how the United States, I think, took the information that was provided to it. And that's the only thing I can say. The United States viewed it that way and said, this is what we think you are showing to us. We have no further documentation that we can offer the court, saying that in addition to that, we said X, Y, and Z. The record is replete that there were meetings, but there are meetings, but that I don't think goes to the initial disclosure that's made to the United States, because there are subsequent investigations where it's clear that Mr. Davis was cooperating with the United States. And he made that clear in his personal statement. But we submit that the central issue here is, assuming that that disclosure that he made is adequate, and we submit that it is, there's no proof that it's not adequate, whether or not he, in effect, is an original source. And we think that the teaching of Rockwell suggests that he indeed is an original source, because all he had to do was relate information about his allegations. And that's what he had to reveal to the government. The Finley case was requiring that the disclosure that had to be made had to in effect be made prior to the public disclosure. And I believe that Rockwell suggested this is not true at all. And it's our view that because Rockwell was the first time the Supreme Court had occasion to look upon the information that had to be disclosed and the timing of the disclosure, that it in effect undercut the rationale of Finley to the point that Finley is not something that we can rely upon any longer at all. And the court below suggested that was true and said, however, because it is precedent of this particular court, it would not speak to that issue, but felt bound by precedent to, in effect, dismiss the case. And we suggested that is just not what should have been done here at all. That what should have been done is that Mr. Davis should have been allowed to proceed with the amended complaint, and the court should have had a chance to look at the other issues that had been raised in summary judgment motion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stacey Anderson on behalf of the District of Columbia. If it may please the court, we'd ask that the court affirm the district court's order dismissing this case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction because Mr. Davis is not an original source of the information upon which his fraud allegations are based, because he did, in fact, fail to disclose that information to the government before filing his complaint.
You're not basing your objection on Finley, right?
Your Honor, no. You
don't think the disclosure was adequate.
Correct, Your Honor. The court doesn't need to reach the Finley issue in this case because whether it was disclosed before the public disclosure is an issue the court need not reach because, in fact, the statute clearly requires that it to have been disclosed to the government before the suit was filed.
Now,
and the only
there's at least something in the record here that suggests that he was having a conversation or that he did tell the government something about what was happening here. So what is there that tells us how specific that has to be?
The statutory language, I think, Your Honor, suggests how specific that information needs to be. Subsection 3730E4B, it says that an original source means an individual who has direct and independent knowledge of the information on which the allegations are based and has voluntarily provided the information to the government before filing an action under this section.
And you've conceded that he has direct and independent knowledge.
Yes, Your Honor, we've conceded that. So the question,
what's missing here?
What information he disclosed to the government, the information underlying the allegations of fraud. It's the government's position that's not simply sufficient for him to say, United States government, I believe the district is engaged in Medicaid fraud. But he has to go beyond that and give the specifics of his allegation. And I think it's particularly important in this case with respect to the first letter at page 75 of the appendix, because as the court's aware, Mr. Davis has filed other fraud allegations related to Medicaid against the district. This court decided a case earlier this year involving an allegation of Medicaid fraud with respect to D.C. General Hospital. So the first letter refers to Medicaid fraud, but doesn't give any context. It doesn't say with with respect to the District of Columbia Public Schools. It doesn't say with respect to the fiscal year 1998 Medicaid reimbursement request. So that really is a vague assertion. And then with respect to the other one, although it references the District of Columbia Public Schools at page 76 of the joint appendix, refers to Medicare fraud, not Medicaid fraud. So it's unclear what exactly led the government to believe that Medicare was at issue here rather than Medicaid. The allegations here are focused solely on Medicaid. Also, no specific details as to what fiscal year is at issue. Mr. Davis was a contractor for the district in 1996 and 97. There were issues with those reports, according to the information that's in the record. We had to refund money for those years as well. Without knowing that what specifically he told the government, he has not carried his burden of proof here to establish that he provided the government the information upon which the fraud claims are based that are at issue in this particular case. And I think that's the easiest way for the court to resolve this case without, again, reaching the Finley issue. If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the court affirm.
Any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I think he had time left. Okay. Well, you have lots of time left.
Well, I don't need lots of time, Your Honor.
Take two.
I'll take two. Thank you, Your Honor. To respond specifically to the district's reference to the two letters and the reference to Medicare fraud, that has been an ongoing issue in this particular case as to whether the Medicare or Medicaid is involved. And I believe when you look at it, the Medicare regulations are involved in terms of deciding whether or not there has been Medicaid fraud. That is, with respect to Medicaid regulations, you've got to look at Medicare and make a determination of what in effect is required. What's required is that you have a certain type of record. You look at the Medicare regulations for that.
I think all that's being argued here is that in order for you to qualify as your client to qualify as an original source, he has to have informed the government of the information that's the basis of his allegation in a way that would allow the government to respond, right? What's curious here is it seems like that is within your client's ability. He knows exactly what he said, right? And so all he has to do, or what he told them, or what specific information he gave them, and all he has to do is put that in the record.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I think that the issue is whether or not putting into the record that he spoke with the government and advised the government of this particular fraud is sufficient. And I would suggest that it is, because he does say that the record does reflect that the government was aware by the disclosure that he made that there was indeed fraud here at issue. Now, I don't think there's anything in the statute which basically says that when you make your disclosure, that what you have to do is in effect give a personal statement and append to it each and every document that you have.
No, I don't, and I don't think that would be the government's argument either, but at least exactly, you know, something about what he did, the who, what, where.
Well, Your Honor, all we can say is that the documents that we have in this particular record are from the government saying that, indeed, this particular person is saying that he has knowledge of it and he's giving the government information related to that. And that they clearly meets the direct and independent, and that the knowledge is sufficient to say for the government to come back and say, yes, there is, you're talking about fraud here, and we understand that, and thank you very much for giving us that information. In one situation, the government says we're going to have it investigated by a particular person and names that person, and in the second one, it does not say that, but the record is replete that there was indeed an investigation that followed.
But part of the problem that we have here is that there have been many claims of fraud covering a number of different entities.
There are only two claims of fraud, Your Honor.
Well, two claims,
there are two claims of fraud, one covering D.C. General Hospital and one covering D.C. Public Schools. There are two separate claims. Now, they have proceeded in this court. There have been many pieces of litigation related to it, but it's always been about just two entities. That's all this case. That's all Mr. Davis has been brought to the case. And that's all Mr. Davis talked about. It's not, as the government says, there are many claims of a fraud because the government had to do many things for many years. But that's just not true here. The year in issue is fiscal year 98, and that information we submit was supplied to the government prior to the disclosure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The case will be submitted. We're in recess.